Last week, I shared with you a little bit about Hulupoi Beach on the island of Lana'i, a place where I could not wait to jump into the water. I could not wait to do that ballet in the water. And I want to share with you something that happened about 36 years ago at Hulupoi Beach. And it seems like such a long time ago, and yet it feels just like today. I was leading a intergenerational retreat of people from Central Union Church to the island of Lana'i. We had a three-year-old who happens to now come to this church, Jenny Dara, who is a professor at the University of Hawaii, but she was three back then. And they range from Jenny at age three up to Agnes Clevenger, who some of you may have known, who came with her ukulele, and she was 80 years old, and we were all camping on the beach, some 35 to 40 of us there at Hulupoi Beach. This was before there was any development. It was this most magnificent, lovely, wonderful place to be. And every morning we would gather on the shoreline, and we would look out to the edge of the bay, and there oftentimes at the edge of the bay we would see dolphins swimming on the outside of the bay, and sometimes we would see them come in, but then they would go out. But on the last morning that we were there together, we saw the dolphins come into that bay. And it's a bay where dolphins are known to come in. I guess the fishing is good there because it's a protected place like Honama Bay. And so there's lots of food for the dolphin in there. And so they swam in fairly close to shore. At that point, there was this slew of folks in the group that were so excited to go jump in the water and go swim with the dolphin. And they grabbed their mask and their snorkel and their fins. And they went swimming out really fast to the dolphin, only to find the dolphin swim away, because why would a dolphin want to be there when there's this just this stuff going on in the water? So I gathered everyone back together, and we treaded water for a while, and I said, calm. You need to calm down. Let your breathing calm down, and let's just sit here and wait. And sure enough, we sat and waited. And sure enough, the dolphin came swimming back in. And for about an hour, 10 to 12 of us were there with a pod of, I think I counted 40 to 60 dolphins, swimming amongst us, little mums with their keiki. Speaking of, Charlie is back there, has just made his first appearance here at Church of the Crossroads, so make sure you say hi to Charlie later on. So moms with their keiki that were there, and they were coming up, they were doing their thing, and it was beautiful. And then they left. And so we swam in. And I sat there on the beach and I felt like something hadn't yet been completed. And I didn't know what it was, but I felt like the visit I had had with the dolphins there just was incomplete. So while I was helping folks to gather up all of our gear because we were going to need to leave soon, I kind of had one eye out on the bay. And as I had that one eye out on the bay, all of a sudden I saw that pod of dolphins come swimming in again. Everyone else was really busy, except for myself and my friend Dick Hubbard, who was with me. And I looked at Dick, and Dick looked at me, and he said, I got this. And he took over my responsibilities, and I grabbed my snorkel, my mask, my fins, and I went back out. And as I swam out, they swam to me. And I had another 10 minutes or so with them. And they were as close to me as I am to the choir right now. And it felt to me so clearly that the visit that I had felt was incomplete to them. And so they had come to say aloha one more time. And so we had this encounter together before 10 minutes later. They said, okay, we're off. And they went their way. I went back and carried on with my responsibilities. But what I can tell you about that moment, it was like a seed that was planted within me, a seed that would come to blossom and bloom as I went off to seminary a few years later, as I began to understand the theology that would shape my life, a seed that would blossom and bloom in the ways that I would live my life, in the ways, the things that would create the jobs, the employment of my life, that the moment like that and many others like that had changed. It was a moment, my come to wonder moment, my come to Jesus moment, my come to God moment with God's creation that shifted the way I was. I am so grateful that my come to wonder moment was so utterly gentle. Job's come-to-wonder moment that Sigrid shared for us was a little bit different. Job's come-to-God moment was preceded by the fact that God and Satan had been having a conversation in the early parts of Job. And God and Satan are having a conversation, and God is saying to Satan, "Have you noticed how wonderful my people are?" And Satan goes, "Eh." And God says, "No, seriously, take a look at Job, for instance. Job is like the top of the order. You couldn't get, look how faithful he is, look how wonderful he is." And Satan says, "Yeah, that's because you provide everything for him. Take it all away and let's see how faithful he is." And God says, "You're on, Satan. You're on. I'll take that bet." And so the next few chapters, from the first chapter of Job, the next few chapters are this just a horror story. Job's children die. His wife becomes estranged from him. He loses his job. He loses his land. He's got boils and blisters everywhere on his body. It's a miserable existence. And he's sitting there talking to his wife, and he's saying, "Woe that I was ever born. This is the worst thing that could ever happen to me." And then along comes Job's friends, and Job's friends come and they say, "Job, what did you do? What did you do to make God so mad at you? Because God wouldn't do this. This must be your fault." And for like 30 chapters, his friends just harangue him. And Job keeps trying to push back against them and says, "No, I didn't do anything." And the friends just keep going at him until Job finally has had it. Job finally has had it. In the end of chapter 37, he starts yelling at God. And he's angry at God. He's very, very angry at God. And he lets God know it. And then all of a sudden there is a voice out of the whirlwind, out of a hurricane. Job is in the midst of a hurricane at this moment. And God speaks to him out of that hurricane and begins to ask him questions. "Who is this?" God says. "Who is this that is darkening my rest? Who is this that is questioning me? Who do you think you are, Job? Who do you think you are? Were you there?" he begins. And Sigrid gave us just a sampling of the "were you there" questions that God asked. "Were you there with the deer and the way in which I created the deer? Were you there with the wild donkey and the world that I created with the wild donkey, for the horse, for the eagle? Were you there in this world of balance and harmony that I created? Were you there? Because this world that you are privileged to be a part of is a world of utter balance and harmony, and you get to be in it. And where were you in the beginning? Is this your creation?" God says to him. And the answer, of course, it is not. It is not. Today we might have God speaking to us and might say to us, "Were you there when I created the leviathans of the deep? Those animals, those great whales that love, the ones that love to feed on the food at the bottoms of the sea where no light can even get to. Were you there when I created them? Were you there when I created the fish for them to eat? Were you there when I created the reality that they needed air above the surface of the water, so they needed to come up from the deep? And in the blowing out of that air, were you there when I made sure that they would let loose this fecal bloom? Were you there when I made sure that fecal bloom was filled with iron and nitrogen, the very things that the phytoplanktons need to eat, the tiny little microscopic plant organisms that can only survive in the photic zone? Were you there so that when the whale comes up and releases that fecal bloom, plants are able to flourish? And because they flourish, the little animal planktons can eat on them. Were you there when I created this cycle, Job? Were you there when I created this cycle so that the small fish can feed on those small plankton that can feed on the plant plankton, and the big fish can feed on them? And furthermore, were you there when I made it so that every time that they came up and down, and all the other animals that do that, they churned up the water, and in the churning up of the water, those phytoplanktons that would want to sink came up to the surface, and not only did they provide food, but they captured CO2. And in the capturing of CO2, they impacted the climate, until their time had come when they would die, and they would take that CO2 and they would let it sink with them to the bottom of the sea, and they would hold on to it. Were you there, Job, when I created this world of balance and harmony so harmonious that even the whales can impact the climate? Were you there? No, you were not. For this, Job, this is my handiwork. This is what God says to us. This is the handiwork of the world that we get to live in, from the microorganisms of the soil, the bacteria, the fungi, the algae, the protozoa, to the decomposers and the life makers, those nematodes and worms and roaches, to the pollinators of the air, bees and birds and bats and moths, the seed-carrying mechanism, that which is contained in vessels of poo dropped in various places by birds, to the vessels of the fruit that fall from the tree, to the wind-borne wings of leaf and floaty. This is my handiwork, God says to us, to the diggers of the forest, the singers on the wind, the roamers of the plains, to the patchwork of koa and hau and kukui and hala and ohia that line our mountains and our hills, to that quilt of uala, of kalo and maya and ulu, all of those plants that define our plains and fill our bellies, to the coral and the limu, the he'e and the veke and the papio that populate that sea with them, the ia manini, the ia nui, the small fish, the big fish that sparkle the sea. This, God says, this is my handiwork. And balanced and harmonious it is, because if you look at all those things that I've just mentioned, what an amazing way in which they mesh together in this amazing interlocking puzzle of harmony and beauty. As amazing as that is, God has also created them indeed with such incredible beauty that it can take your breath away. And that is what Jesus is referring to in Luke. Consider the lilies of the valley, Jesus says. The birds of the air, the grass of the fields, they neither toil nor spin, yet God arrays them with such beauty and provides for them in such ways. Consider indeed the ohai, of the dunes, the elipayo of the uplands, the soaring eva birds, the dancing kolea. Consider the naupaka mauka, the naupaka makai, the plants that have existence in the mountains and the sea, the ohia of the hillsides. They neither toil nor spin, yet God has assured them of their beauty, has assured them of their sustenance. This, God says to us, this world, this is my handiwork. But I'm afraid that were God to speak the words, the recitation of harmony and balance and beauty that we hear in Job, that we hear in the Gospel of Luke, and the questions that emanate, that say, were you there? Did you have anything to do with the creation of this? There would be other questions that God would be asking us right now. Would God not be asking of us humankind right now? Would God not be saying, what have you done? Where have all the carrier pigeons gone? Would God not ask that question? Those pigeons that when they flocked a century or so ago, they were so great and vast was their cloud that you could see them for hour upon hour. Why are my bison so reduced, God might ask. They who once ruled the plains, whose hooves aerated the soil, who distributed native seeds and make sure that there was ecological diversity throughout the grain plains. What has happened, God might say, of the gorillas in the mist, now numbering less than 3,000? What has happened to all the species of tigers, all together themselves also less than 3,000? Would God not ask us, why were the pelts of the sea otter, the sea cow, which is no more, the many kinds of seals, including the monk seal, more important than the care and protection that you were asked to give when you were created? Where are the leatherhead turtles, the loggerheads that once thickened the sea? Why are they so few? What has become of the songs of the birds, the o'o, the akialoa, the amakihi? Where has their music gone? Why do I struggle, God might say, to see the flight of the nene but just in a few places? to hear the song of the Elipio, but just in a few places, to witness the nighttime foraging of the Opeapea, the Hawaiian hoary bat, the kaleidoscope of the Pupu Kami'ioe, the land shells, the tree snails. Why is that lovely koa dog safer in the wilds of the world, wilds of the wilderness, than in the wilds of humankind? And more importantly, would God not be asking us, what will you do? And there are those amongst us who may be the children that were up here. They may be the ones that may be tasked at one time or another to have the kuleana, to care for one species or another, to make sure that it does not go out of existence. God bless Dorothy and Irving Stowe, the founders of Greenpeace that have helped us to save the whales of the sea. God bless Diane Fossey, who helped us to save the gorillas in the mist. God bless Ruth Gates, who we just lost, and her work with coral to make sure that the coral populations can grow and grow. God bless Jane Goodall and the chimpanzees and the many species she has cared for. God bless Dr. Paula Kahumbu, who has created hands-off elephants to protect the wild, the elephants of the wild. And God bless any one of us who, if it is your kuleana, to be called to a species or another to protect it specifically. But that is not the kuleana of most of us. That is not the responsibility of most of us. For most of us, it will not be to a specific animal, to a specific class of fauna that we are called. Rather, it is the call of the very orientation of our lives. How do we see ourselves in relationship to God's creation? Do we see ourselves as apart from God's creation, in which we see the human world and the natural world, and so we see ourselves and we see an other? And because we see that as an other, we then refer to that which is in the natural world as resources, natural resources for our consumption and our needs, with us having no knowledge or no thinking of the consequences for them. Or do we see ourselves not as a part from, but instead do we see ourselves as a part of God's creation, taking seriously God's call to us to care for all of the elements of creation as if they are our brothers and sisters? Do we see that kinship relationship in our world that we live in? And if so, do we have the will, do we have the strength, do we have the courage to shift many of the habits that have become the habits of our world? Do we have the strength and the courage to eliminate the plastics that are a part of our life so that that stray plastic bag floating in the sea chokes no more turtles, so that that stray drift net kills no more plants, so that those stray micro pieces of plastic do not poison the birds or poison our very system? Do we have the strength and the will to change the way we will be? Do we have the strength and the will to live as a world in which we are a part of, not apart from, and therefore honor the raindrop as it falls upon the top of the mountain, it works its way, Makai, to make sure that as that raindrop joins with other raindrops, it will not pick up effluent, it will not pick up chemicals and fertilizers and all other things so that it poisons the reef when it goes? Do we have the willingness to change our very food habits, to eat, to cause ourselves, to help ourselves to eat lower on the food chain, to consume less resources in the way in which we eat, to make sure that when our fishery stocks are low, that those are not the fish that we are desiring and eating, to make sure that those plains that the bison one time aerated the soils are able to retain in that diversity and therefore perhaps eat less beef that has grown there? Do we have the courage to do that? Do we have the courage to reduce and eliminate our carbon in this world, the way in which we travel? And if we are going to travel, do we have the willingness to take out our wallet and at least buy ourselves carbon offsets for the travel that we will have? Do we have the strength of the rebuild and refurbish the forests of the sea as well as the forests of the land? And where better to practice all of these changed habits in our world than right here in Hawaii, where 10% of the nation's animals that are on the endangered species list exist in our little state, and 50% of the endangered plants on the endangered species list for the nation exist right here. Where better to practice than in this place where we are daily reminded of the harmony, the balance, and the beauty that God creates? Consider the lilies of the valley, Jesus said. When he said those words 2,000 years ago, it would have been out of his frame of reference and out of the frame of reference of anyone hearing to think that those lilies of the valley would not be able to just carry on in perpetuity forever and ever and give to us their metaphorical message time and time again. But today, when Jesus is here amongst us, and he says, consider the lilies of the valley, are there not other things that he is asking of us as well? Is he not also asking of us to consider them as our neighbor? To consider our neighborhood to not be just that which is defined by the streets or the valleys in which we live in, but a neighborhood that encompasses the entirety of God's creation. Consider them as your neighbors. Are we willing to do that? Consider them as your kin, for we know from what God has created that we are all starlight, we are all stardust, we are all from the very same thing. We are all kin to all that has been created. Can we treat this world as our brother and sister? Consider the lilies of the valley. Consider all of these marvelous things that surround our lives as expressions of the beauty and the wonder of the divine. Consider how God speaks to us, not just in spoken word with one another, but in the beauty and the harmony and the balance of the created world. Consider that expression and love our God. Amen.